free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. Today is December 10th, 2007, and we have as our guest today Paul Paber, who is with, he's a vice president of renewable energy at Waste Management. That's the company that comes around to haul off garbage. They're increasingly turning some of that garbage into energy, enough to power over 1 million homes, the equivalent of 14 million barrels of oil per year or 3.6 million tons of coal. And the company has a goal to double that amount to 2 million homes by 2020. Paul, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, waste to energy has been a strong topic of interest for me ever since I started covering renewable energy technologies. And I consider waste to energy a free energy technology because it is a renewable source that will never go away. As long as there are humans, there will be waste. And why not turn that waste, including sewage, into energy? And your company is doing it. Not just talking about it, you have technologies in the field now that are turning waste, trash, into energy. Tell us just a little bit about how that works.
I'm in the renewable energy group, which converts landfill gas to energy. And at these facilities, we take the landfill gas produced by the waste in the landfill, collect it, pipe it over to engines and turbines with turn generators, and then we're connected to the distribution grid of a utility and deliver that electricity back to the homes.
All right. And the mechanism by which you turn the landfill gas into energy, the trash is sitting in the ground, is decomposing, it's giving off methane. How are you harnessing that?
Well, you're right. When the waste is delivered to the landfill, it is placed in a protected cell or protected liner, and shortly thereafter starts decomposing. When it decomposes, it produces about half methane and about half carbon dioxide. As the landfill is filled and the waste is built up, we go in and put in collection pipes. Much like we use a drilling rig. We drill from the top of the waste down, drill about a 3-foot diameter hole, and put in a perforated pipe into that hole, backfill it with gravel typically, and then seal off the top. Each one of these wells are spaced about one per acre. They're all connected to a header pipe, and the header pipe goes to typically a blower, and if we don't have a power plant there, that gas is flared off. So if you can envision the landfill with a series of pipes and connectors and header pipes, we put a vacuum on that entire system to draw the gas out of the landfill.
I understand that you have to regulate that vacuum so that you don't introduce air into the mix.
That's right. There's almost as much art as there is science to that process. Each of the wells is individually tuned. We put a vacuum on the well field, and we have well field technicians whose continuous job is to monitor the methane content, the air intake, the vacuum, the temperature, a number of other parameters, and going around to sometimes several hundred wells in one landfill, and balancing the field, setting the vacuum so that it's right, making sure we don't have upsets or discontinuities in the piping system. So it's a continuous process. It's a continuous flow of gas, and it requires an on-site manager to take care of that.
That's a full-time situation?
That's right. Yeah, we will have landfills where we either have a waste management employee or a consultant to tune the well field on a frequent basis and monitor it to make sure that, as you're right, the it's not pulling in too much air from the atmosphere, which would dilute the quality of the gas.
Also, I understand that introducing air can create a fire hazard.
There are situations where, first of all, the landfill on the top is capped so that it prevents the intrusion of air, and that's part of the process of balancing the well field is to make sure that you're not pulling air through that cap, which can also destroy the anaerobic bacteria. We want to maintain the anaerobic bacteria life in the landfill in order to keep producing the methane. Intrusion of air into that system can destroy the bacteria and actually reduce the quantity of gas.
And when you say destroy the bacteria, it'd be like taking a fish out of water where they need the water environment to live, and vice versa, taking a mammal and putting it into water that's not a whale, they drown because they need oxygen. And the anaerobic means that they have to have, or they cannot have oxygen, or they will die. So if they die, then it's a matter of the ones that survive that onslaught, then repopulating.
That's right. Sometimes that takes a while. So it's very important for us to balance the well field to maintain that situation and to maintain all the various compliance parameters that we have in our landfill permits.
So if your vacuum is set too high, it pulls air in. That's a problem. What about on the bottom side if you don't suck enough? What's the downside of not having the vacuum set high enough?
Setting the vacuum too low means that you're probably not withdrawing all of the landfill gas that's available, that's being produced as the waste decomposes. And so we balance that vacuum with not wanting to bring in the air, but also controlling that we don't have methane emissions from the landfill.
Mm-hmm.
If we set it too low, the vacuum, there's potential for methane emissions.
From a greenhouse gas point of view, methane is how much more potent than CO2 in terms of greenhouse gas?
I believe my information is it's about 23 times more.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's incumbent on us to collect that methane and be sure that it's destroyed either by flaring or, of course, preferably with a renewable energy project.
Now, let's, of course, flaring it off turns the methane into, what are the byproducts of flaring it off?
Byproducts would be the carbon dioxide, not only that comes through with the methane that's generated by the waste, but also carbon dioxide is one of the emissions.
Okay.
From the flare,
which is much less potent as a greenhouse gas than the methane.
That's right.
Why you flare it off?
That's right. 23 times less.
Now let's talk about why would someone even consider flaring it off when you've got a free gas to be burned in a turbine?
Well, there is, first of all, there's some cost involved with the gas because we have to put in the system, and like I said, there's a continuous operations maintenance cost involved with it. But once
right.
That's in, you're right. It's gas that's available for use as fuel. And there's a lot of reasons why a landfill may not have a renewable energy project in yet. One, of course, is that it takes a certain amount of gas to support a minimum size project.
Mm-hmm.
When the waste comes into the landfill, as more waste accumulates, the landfill gas flow keeps increasing. So with time, you may start off with a landfill that doesn't have enough gas to support a project, but with time in a few years, the gas flow will increase enough to support a project. So first we look at the gas flow and whether or not there's enough to support a project.
Meaning you've got an infrastructure you've got to install. You've got the turbines, you've got the maintenance, you've got the sheds, you've got the transmission lines, et cetera, to install. And if it's not enough gas to to make that worthwhile, then you just flare it off.
That's right. And I'll go down the list here. There's, first of all, landfill gas, and secondly, we do have to interconnect the power plant to the utility lines, usually at the distribution line level. We generally don't connect at the big transmission line level, the big steel towers that you see. It's typically at a local community distribution line. But in some cases, we have to build a line a few miles. In some cases, we have to participate in a new substation. There's some things that can drive up those costs. And we look at the availability of the interconnect, how much it's going to cost, and whether or not we're constrained on the capacity of our power plant. So, first starting with the gas flow and then going on to the interconnect, making sure that's available and at a reasonable cost. And thirdly, permitting. These do require air permits, and they're typically associated with the landfill permit, and each state is a little bit different. But we look at the emissions rates from the engines and the state requirements, and all of our plants, of course, meet the air permit requirements of the state. And one of the most important issues, of course, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, is the energy pricing and the renewable energy incentives have to be enough to, like you said, support the investment and support the expenses associated with that power plant. And then finally, just the landfill issues. These should be compatible with landfills. Our primary service is taking the community waste and disposing of it in an environmentally sensitive manner, and we want to make sure that the power plant is compatible with any noise constraints or traffic or visibility or any other permit issues that or parameters that the landfill may have.
One of the things we cover in our news and in our directory is a whole myriad of new engine technologies that are much more efficient than the traditional internal combustion engine design, which is very inefficient. And I'm curious as to how much waste management as a company, the renewable energy sector that's looking at turning that methane into electricity via a turbine and a generator, how much the generator end of things tends to be, they've pretty much optimized that in the industry, and they're very efficient there, but the turbine end of things, turning the gas into torque, there are some really clever designs that are out there with good prototyping done, it's hard to break into the automobile industry because they want 5 years of use and data before they even take a look at it. I'm just curious, how in your industry, how much are you looking at some of these alternative systems for efficiently, cost-effectively turning that gas into electricity?
I'm not sure if there's any specific examples you're talking about, but there are engines out there, like you said, that over the years have gotten incrementally more efficient. Using the same combustion technology, most of what we use are internal combustion engines, the reciprocating piston engines, like you would have in your car. And these are more efficient than the turbines, which are similar to a jet engine. And we have made some incremental progress on making those more efficient. Other than that, what we're using, of course, is tried and true. We've used the same engine type for about 20 years now, and reliability and run rate just have an overwhelming impact on making one of these viable. And so
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
When you say 20 years, it raises the question of how long have you been converting refuse into electricity?
Our landfill gas projects, the first one started in the late 1980s. And we've been, we had a quite a bit of development in the late 80s, early 90s, and then energy market and other forces came into play late 90s, early 2000s, and we plateaued a little bit, and now a number of market forces have come together again to make this a viable form of energy again.
1 million homes, that's a lot of electricity that you're generating right now, and the, you know, you'd be commended for that. I understand the waste management, your company, is the leader in the industry in terms of the number of landfill to electricity, the amount of electricity you're generating, and the number of projects you have going.
Yeah, we have over 106 landfills now where something is done with the landfill gas. And the one thing about landfill gas is there's several different alternatives on how to use it. At about three-fourths of these projects, we do convert the landfill gas to electricity. And many of these are on-site power plants, relatively small, 3 megawatts to, say, 10 megawatts. In some cases, we take the landfill gas and we pipe it to a nearby electrical facility off-site. In some cases, it's blended with coal or natural gas at a utility plant. In some cases, it's cogeneration on an industrial site. For example, in South Carolina, there's a BMW plant about, I believe it's 8 miles from one of our landfills, and we pipe it to BMW. They've got their own turbines, so they use our landfill gas in their turbines, and they're also using it now for some paint drying facilities. So, go ahead.
That raises the question of earlier you were talking about where you don't, where the cost may be too high to install an on-site system for taking care or burning off that gas and converting it into electricity. Why wouldn't, I'm sure it's still an infrastructure question, you know, piping or trucking, but the gas is coming off there. Why wouldn't you put that into canisters and truck it somewhere where it could be used productively?
We don't put it in canisters. The compression costs for that and the fact that it's half carbon dioxide means that you're transporting half of your product is not combustible. So there are many projects out there where you put in just a single-use pipeline between the landfill and one end user so that we may be selling to an industrial user to use it in a steam boiler or for general heating purposes. We sell to a cement kiln. There's a number of large industries out there that use landfill gas. Honeywell is one, Goldkist, Ford, GE, General Motors, going down my list of projects here, Lafarge Cement Kiln. There's a number of industries out there that are close enough to a landfill and are compatible with their operations with the medium BTU landfill gas. And the flow of landfill gas is pretty compatible with their fuel use that a number of these projects have gone in. And we look at each landfill and look at the alternative of potentially just selling landfill gas to one end user.
Mm-hmm. In the future outlay or location of landfills in developing areas, how much does the vicinity to such industries play in the decision-making about where to situate the new landfills?
Usually the waste management considerations drive the location and siting of a new landfill. Many other issues, accessibility, traffic, location to community, compatible land use drive the siting of a landfill. But there are cases where some industries have now learned of the potential of landfill gas, and there are some industries out there who evaluate possibly siting next to a landfill in order to take advantage of a lower cost and consistent and stable fuel supply in the landfill gas.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So rather than the waste management being situated next to an industry, it goes the other way around.
That's right.
How much of that is there?
We've got several that we're looking at a possibility of that. Of course, the lead time on those can be pretty long, because if an industry is looking to locate near a landfill, they also have to go through all the siting and location requirements, the land purchases, and the design and construction of their own facility. So in some cases, the lead time on that is a consideration, because we're flaring landfill gas, and sometimes it gets a little bit, we get a little impatient and maybe start to look at other alternatives. So if there's a nearby industry with a pipeline, some of these pipelines are 20 miles long.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, the typical length is probably in the 1 mile to, say, 6 mile range. But ideally, we'd find somebody close in first and then compare that to a landfill gas to electricity project.
Mm-hmm. Now, the competition, these industries, the cement kilns, GM, et cetera, what would they normally be using, natural gas?
It varies. Again, it's some form of fossil fuel, and they're not actually our competition. They'd be our customers, because we would be selling them the landfill gas. But in some cases, they're using some sort of oil product. In some cases, many cases, or in most cases, it'd be natural gas, and in some cases, they'd be using coal.
Uh-huh. Now, one of the earlier we were talking about the gas that comes off the landfill being 50% methane, 50% CO2. How many other things are in there, and do you have to scrub those out somehow? I imagine there's some other nasties that come off, sulfur, for example, that might be coming off into gas emissions from the landfill.
There's typically a sulfur component that is in the landfill gas, and we have only two projects now that actually remove the sulfur. The engines that we use are typically robust enough that they're able to accommodate some amount of sulfur. The sulfur is corrosive on the engine parts. We accommodate that on the maintenance side by either more frequent oil changes or more frequent top-end overhauls, minor overhauls. So very often we found that dealing with the various minor constituents in the landfill gas on the maintenance side is cheaper than trying to take it out on the front end.
Mm-hmm. Some of these technologies, and when we're done with the show, I can give you the URL of our page. There are hundreds of really good designs out there to take just about any kind of gas and combust it and turn it into torque for running a generator.
Mm-hmm.
Some really clever designs. Some of them are internal combustion, some of them are external combustion, Stirling engine types of systems. But there's some really good technologies out there. And I'm guessing that it would be similar, where the sulfur would not be as much of an issue as maybe if you were to burn it in an automobile engine. I imagine that's not as resistant to that kind of a component in the gas.
That's right. In fact, some of the newer, more sophisticated internal combustion engines are less tolerant, just because of their performance requirements are less tolerant to some of the landfill gas constituents than some of the traditional engines that we've used. But then you do get into, well, a Stirling engine, external combustion would be probably more compatible with some of these constituents, but we haven't found an application for Stirling engines that would be competitive with or economically viable compared to the internal combustion engines that we're using. Fuel cells, we've looked at fuel cells. We'll continue to look at fuel cells. Of course, their capital cost per kilowatt is quite a bit higher. And they would require extensive cleanup before you'd be able to use the landfill gas as a source of hydrogen. Mm-hmm. So we keep our eyes on all of these, including heat recovery systems, and where they are commercially viable, we would insert those into our plant design.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that we've not addressed yet, in terms of turning waste into energy, this is a subject that I've been keeping my ear to the ground for years on, and I've collected quite a number of companies, resources, technologies, approaches for turning waste, including sewage, tires, etc., medical waste, nuclear waste, into energy. And the landfill gas, the method you're talking about, is one approach. I'm wondering how much waste management as a company looks at some of these other methods, for example, the plasma, the high-intensity plasma arc that takes all elemental input, reduces it to its, or it takes all any kind of incoming substance and turns the molecules into the elemental components. And so what you get on the output side is a gas and a inert solid that can be used for bricks, can be used for construction. And, of course, right now that the fees in that are quite high, you know, they're going to be, their low-hanging fruit is going to be things like medical waste, which is has very high tipping fees. The landfill waste is not going to have as good of a tipping fee to make that cost effective yet. Once they get their systems refined, then they're going to be able to even handle the lower tipping fees and still be competitive. How much do you look at some of these other technologies that are out there?
But you are right. There's a lot of fascinating technologies out there, and a lot of innovation, a lot of development going on into the industry right now. Waste Management has an organic growth group that actively looks at all of these technologies, and you've hit on a lot of the hot points there. Right now, what we've seen is that commercial viability is just now being developed and evaluated. Large-scale operations may not be commercially viable right now, but we are certainly looking at all of these and monitoring them, in some cases contributing to some R&D on these, so that when they do become viable, they can be a part of our waste management options.
Mm-hmm. Are there any that are close that you're that you're looking at starting to implement and possibly even phasing into and away from the, I mean, if you think about it, right now you're burying the trash in the ground and you're collecting the gas that comes off from the anaerobic bacteria that are in the soil. But these other approaches actually would take all waste and you wouldn't even have to bury it. You can turn it into construction materials, and the gas can be used for electricity or automobiles, and so that seems to be the, from an ecological point of view, preferable once the costs can come down. And so I guess I'm curious, how close are some of these other technologies, and could you give us some ideas of some of the things that look most interesting and promising to you at this point?
You know, I know about those technologies. I'm not an expert in those technologies, so it'd be conjecture for me to try to say how close they are. Right now, the way we look at it is landfills are necessary just because these technologies have not hit the mainstream and have not been commercialized yet. Again, we're looking at those technologies, but right now landfills are an environmentally protective way to deal with the waste, and of course, my group is making energy from the landfills, but for me to give you a prediction on how close they are, I'm not an expert in that field.
Okay. I'm curious, let's divert on another subject for a second, and that is recycling, which is still in the same ballpark of environmental consciousness and turning waste into not energy so much as conserving energy by, you know, if you can recycle paper, then you don't have to make new paper or you don't have to cut down a new tree. There are some energy implications in recycling as well. And maybe you can give us an idea of what, just a ballpark idea for a second, on what Waste Management as a company is doing in the recycling area.
Again, that's out of my field of business, but I can give you some generalities. Waste Management is the biggest recycler in the country, and we have recently really promoted single-stream recycling, in which the consumer or the customer is able to put all recyclables into one bin, which would include paper and cardboard and plastics and metals. And that bin goes to what's called a single stream recycling center, which then resorts all of that material for resale and recycling. And one of the benefits of the single stream recycling is it reduces the work effort or the effort on the part of the consumer to do separation, and it reduces transportation costs and labor requirements on picking up the various different bins, and hopefully it increases recycling rates because of those benefits.
I could see how the metal could be pulled out with magnets or, except, you know, it wouldn't work for things like aluminum, but again, you mentioned that this is not your area of expertise, but perhaps you can just give us, you obviously know about it more than most of us in the audience. Could you talk for a second about how that separation process works on an automated basis?
They're very interesting facilities. There's a whole series of course, magnets pulling out steel. There are blowers that blow through the waste stream coming on a conveyor belt and blow the lightweight plastics up while the heavier pieces drop to the bottom. There are conveyor belts with little bumps on them that vibrate and cause the heavier weight materials to fall back down an inclined conveyor belt while the lighter materials go up. There's a whole series of mechanical operations like that, and ultimately at one point there's conveyors with people picking and sorting from a conveyor specific pieces of paper or cardboard. So it's a big process. It's very interesting, and we're building a number of them right now.
How many cities are using this method?
I wish I could tell you, but I don't have that number in front of me. I know that it is a technology that Waste Management is one of the experts in the industry in, and we have a number of them in progress.
That sounds really good. I'm glad to know about that. It's been frustrating for me living in a rural area in Utah for several years. We had to drive all the way up into the, you know, Provo area before we could get to a recycling bin of any kind. Do you find that, I imagine that's true in the industry in general, that the further you get away from metropolitan areas, the less cost effective it is to collect and sort for recycling.
Yeah, I think that is the case with a lot of these technologies, that in each market area, we have to look at the best management approach, and then communities need to decide, too, on what waste management approach and options that they have available to them and want to pursue. But I would imagine that some market areas are more challenging than others.
I would imagine that this is a new question, new area, that someday each home will, or each business will have it would start on a larger scale. You know, a business would have a collection point where they could actually locally convert the waste into energy, and so you wouldn't have, even have to go the step of taking it to a landfill or taking it to a central collection point. How many years away do you think we are from something like that, where I could buy a device as part of my home investment? You know, you've got your air conditioner unit, you've got your trash to energy unit that sits in the out in the garage or outside the garage, where you just haul your trash, you know, certain kinds of trash, and it right there turns your trash into electricity or fuel for your car.
You know, we've talked about a lot of technologies here today, and I really couldn't speculate on that. I think there are many people out there working on green energy and alternative energy sources, and when something like that would come up, I don't know when that might happen.
Yeah. I imagine we're a good 2 or 3 generations away, but it's fun to speculate. Now back to where you as a company are right now. Is waste management only in the U.S., or are you also in some other countries?
We are in Canada and Puerto Rico, and we have no operations overseas. So all of our efforts, of course, then are landfill gas to energy is also primarily U.S. and Canada.
Uh-huh. These technologies that you use for converting waste to energy, are they primarily things that you have sourced elsewhere, or how much of it has been derived in-house from your own research and development interests and that you own patents on, for example?
Most of it is off-the-shelf technology. And so the internal combustion engines, there's a number of vendors out there that provide those that run specifically on landfill gas. These engines do have to be reconditioned for landfill gas use. The materials used in them typically are more resistant to corrosion than, say, a natural gas engine. And the turbines, for example, the fuel injectors have to accommodate more flow because we only have half the methane that natural gas has. And so all of these vendors over a period of years have developed engines running specifically on biogas, which would include landfill gas. And we internally have developed quite a bit of expertise on how to operate these. We've got a staff of about 25 now, and about half of those are operations managers who help troubleshoot and maintain the engines. And then over the years, we've added some of our own technology, and typically just control technology and fuel control technology to the engines that we get from the vendors. But they've been tweaked over the years to give us higher run rates, which is one of our primary goals, and then also less maintenance cost.
Another thing that comes to mind as we're talking is while you're venting off some of this methane before, while it's not yet economical to set up either pipe it to a local industry that can use it or to create a local power plant, one of the technologies that is advancing very well right now is thermal electric, where you can convert heat directly into electricity. So you don't even have an engine. It's kind of like a solar panel where you take the sunlight and turn it into electricity, a photovoltaic. These thermoelectric technologies are converting heat into electricity. And so I'm wondering, in your scoping around and looking at technologies out there to plug into your network, is that something that you guys are watching and how close is it to becoming economically viable to implement something like that?
First of all, going back to one of your earlier comments. I just want to emphasize we're not venting the gas where we don't have a power plant. We are combusting it or destroying the gas in a flare. So it's not being vented to the atmosphere.
I meant to say flare.
I know you did. I just wanted to make sure that was clarified. The other technologies, again, I think we look at those similar to waste conversion technologies and track those, monitor those. I haven't looked directly at the thermal electricity model at this point. And it would be a matter of, again, that these flares are typically our enclosed flares are about 12 feet in diameter and about 40 feet tall. And so there would be the question of how you collect that heat off of the flare, whether it's for a thermal electricity or a Stirling engine or one of the other uses. But right now, the most efficient method for us is the internal combustion engine, and we track these other technologies, but haven't made any applications yet.
Uh-huh. I would imagine even with those, even if you were able to generate electricity locally, you still have to set up your lines to conduct that electricity to where it can be used. And that can be one of the expenses that can prohibit you in some of your more remote landfills.
That's right. Even smaller applications with on-site use and offsetting your on-site loads, very often those are higher capital costs, and you've got to have just the right combination of a number of things, right amount of gas, the high local electricity rates that you would be offsetting, and then a system that's reliable enough to provide the on-site power consistently.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I try and do for the industry in general is to bring awareness of the, you know, when we talk about free energy, I first of all broaden that definition. Typically, free energy is thought of as some of these quack science, lifting yourself up by your own bootstrap types of technologies, or, you know, fringe things. We like to just all dump them into the free energy and it's all quack science. But when I say free energy, I'm referring to energy that is, you don't have to pay for the energy source, but the device itself that harnesses that energy costs money. And when people are talking about, being able to get electricity from rocks, for example, it may be true if you put electrodes on certain kinds of minerals, you do get a voltage across them. But to turn that into something practical is extremely difficult so that you're cost competitive and your prices is cheaper than coal. And that's your competition in this industry, even though technically every landfill could become an energy source, the costs are so high in many cases that it doesn't make it worthwhile harnessing that energy. And so the whole challenge here is to come up with technologies that, methods that are efficient, practical, et cetera. And that's why it's fun to talk to somebody in the industry where a lot of the technologies we cover are usually, in prototype stage. They've got a proof of concept, but they're not commercial yet. Well, you guys are commercial and you're offsetting a million homes of electricity with the landfills that you're harnessing the energy off of. And so, you know, you very much have your feet on the ground in terms of knowing the whole issue of how much of the cost and the considerations involved in establishing, turning that waste into energy.
Well, you're right. There is a large investment here, and even with a known technology, The large investment, you still go in there with some risk. The energy market risk, landfill gas, quantity risks, just the operations risk, sometimes machines break and you have to deal with that. But even with the known technology, there's risk involved. And so you're right. When we look at new technologies, there has to be, by any investor, an understanding of the risks involved, and one of those risks then becomes the technology risk of will it work, and if it does, how well will it work, and will it be reliable?
Mm-hmm. How much of your investment portfolio would you say your company devotes towards these more speculative, high-risk ideas and ventures, and helping them, you know, testing them out, see if they really work?
I'm not at liberty to say we do invest in it. We target those technologies which look to us have promise and which are synergistic to our other waste management operations. We have a number of R&D efforts ongoing, and again, the amount of investment is consistent with the promise that we see in those technologies.
On a total tangent here, while I've got you on the phone, I'm curious. These trucks that come around picking up the garbage, they have the little arm that comes out and grabs the can and lifts it up and dumps it in. You know, it's all automated. I'm curious how much has that saved the industry in cost to be able to go to that automated system?
That's more of a tangent than I know. I apologize for that, but I'm not familiar with those numbers.
Okay.
Just
curious. I play a game with the trash collection company. They come on Friday morning, and we're supposed to have our trash can out by 7, and we usually forget, so we hear the truck coming, and they're getting out of bed, throwing on the pants, jumping outside, you know. And if they miss, you know, if we miss the first round, then they always have a couple little routes that, you know, it's easy to catch them as their second or third trip through the neighborhood. And, but it's fun. They take the kids to the window, and we watch them come and pick it up and put it in. And it's quite a little ceremony we have every week.
Well, there is certainly more to the industry, I think, than what people see from their curbside, from picking it up and then bringing it to the landfills, all the science and engineering involved with landfill and making them environmentally protective. And then, as we've talked about, let's do something with the waste after it's already in the landfill. And sometimes the electricity goes back to that same curbside.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that we've not talked about yet that I wanted to touch on that is a bit of a tangent to energy as well, but I think is a curiosity question, and that is, it used to be that, you know, we pictured landfill, they just go out there, dig a hole in the ground, put the trash in, and bury it. But it's much more sophisticated than that now. You have certain standards you have to meet. Could you talk to that just for a minute or so?
Yes, EPA a number of years ago passed the RCRA standards, and they relate not only to hazardous waste, but also municipal solid waste, and that's the business that we're in. And those standards were adopted by the states, and they require certain minimum standards on groundwater protection, which includes a sophisticated liner that's placed in the bottom of the excavation and along the sidewalls that consists of a low permeability clay and a plastic liner. There's what's called a leachate collection system, which is placed on top of the liner, which collects the water and liquids that are accumulated in the landfill, and we're required to keep that leachate level to a minimum or a maximum height above the liner. Then a long series of other technology requirements, a cap on top of the liner, groundwater protection, groundwater monitoring, air emissions monitoring. So there are many things that originated with the EPA, were adopted by the states. In some cases, states have adopted more stringent regulations than the EPA, and a modern landfill complies with all of those requirements.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I wanted to address in this segment is to talk about biomass. And the conversion of biomass into energy. Is waste management involved in that at all?
That also in the waste conversion technologies are things that we evaluate. In-vessel anaerobic digestion, fermentation, plasma arc, all of those technologies are covered in our organic growth group. We are looking at other alternatives for on the landfill gas side. Reducing dependence on oil, of course, requires that we find alternative transportation fuel. So we're looking at converting landfill gas to liquefied natural gas, LNG. And that, of course, requires a purification and liquefaction process. We have between 400 and 500 waste collection trucks in California that now run on dual fuel with LNG. And so our efforts are focused out there right now on some research and development in trying to convert landfill gas to LNG to run our trucks on. And, of course, many of these waste conversion technologies end up with some sort of gas product. You mentioned before plasma arc, which produces a syngas. So many of the technologies that we have used over the past 20 years could be applicable to the back end of these waste conversion technologies.
Is there a drive or efforts initiative at Waste Management for separating out biomass sources of material, tree limbs, wood products that could be used in that manner?
We are participating in one project in South California regarding the cellulose to ethanol, which would use green waste as a source for the fuel. And, of course, many states now ban green waste from landfills. And so we look at all of these different technologies on composting or some sort of waste conversion technology to use that green waste.
And the reason they ban it is because it's biodegradable and they want it to go into the ground?
Yeah, the states all have, I guess, different reasons for wanting to do that, but partly because of the potential for a single stream to maybe be used for something else and to just limit the amount of waste going to the landfill and use it for other productive purposes.
All right, well, we're just about the end of our segment. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we've not gotten to yet?
Well, I appreciate being a part of the discussion here. We're excited about this business. We're building about 8 or so new landfill gas to energy plants per year and expect to be built out in some number of years from now, five or so years. And it's an exciting business to be in. We participate with the renewable energy resources like wind and solar and promoting this nationwide. And, it's part of the solution, and we're trying to be there and do our part.
When you say you participate in wind and solar technology, could you elaborate on that for a minute?
We participate in the industry on promoting this type of renewable energy. And again, wind and solar are things that we look as if we've got property available to us on landfills, Maybe wind and solar are compatible with the property that we have. It's one of the many technologies that we're looking at on an ongoing basis. But our group participates in things like the Department of Energy Renewable Energy Marketing Conference every year because we're part of that whole industry on the wind, the geothermal, the biomass, the solar.
What's the best web location? Your main website is wm.com. Is it /thinkgreen? Is that the best place to go to get more information about this?
On our company, that's the best place to go. Industry-wide, EPA has an agency called LMOP, Landfill Methane Outreach Program, and they also have a number of tools and information on landfill gas to energy.
Well, Paul, it's been a delight talking to you. I appreciate you coming on the show to talk about this very interesting topic, waste to energy, converting that which we throw away into something that is useful, both in terms of electricity and recycling and some other initiatives you have. I take my hat off to what you're doing and encourage you to keep up the good work.
Okay. Well, thank you for the opportunity. It's always a pleasure to talk about this topic.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.